Madison, Texas.
This is one of my favorite parts, getting to mess with the microphone. My name is Ellen Cassidy, and I'm an enthusiastic Al-Anon. First, I'm concerned about these people who aren't at a table. Do you have empty, if you have empty chairs at your table, would you raise your hand so they could come sit with, you can come sit at tables. You really could, and be part of. That's what this is about, being part of. There you go. And then that'll be the last time I'll take care of you all day. That's a joke, right, Jennifer? That's a joke. It's a joke, son. I am just delighted to be with you. I was thinking about that this morning, that I was delighted to be here. I was delighted, la, 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 la. And I think delighted is not the right word. It ought to be enlightened. I'm enlightened to be with you. The light's coming on. It's not going off, for gosh sakes. And I'm going to have a terrible time trying to tell you from the bay, because there's nothing I'd rather do than watch the water, you know. But I promise I will do my very best. I was looking at your faces, and I was thinking you were absolutely the perfect people to have here today. And I'm so glad you chose to come, because it wouldn't have been the same without you. I'm really glad you're here. For the people who are new, for whom this may be your first or second or third Al-Anon meeting, God love you. We tend to speak a language in Al-Anon called Alanese. And we understand what we're saying, but it may sound a lot like gobbledygook to you. My suggestion, if indeed this is your first or second or third meeting, is please, please, please listen for the ways we're alike and not the ways we're different. Trying to separate myself from other people is what keeps me sick. And you're sort of jumping in the middle of stuff here, because we're talking about the traditions today. And to my way of thinking, until you have a good grasp of the steps, the traditions are sort of hard to get into. We're supposed to, our only instructions when we tell our stories to each other is we're supposed to say what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like today. What I'm going to be sharing with you for a good deal of the day today is what it's like for me today. If you want to hear what it used to be like, you need to come tonight and hear my story. Hopefully a lot of that won't creep into this. But this is more what my life is like today. And for those of you who are new, I don't often like to admit this, because I don't want you to think that this is as good as it gets after all these years. But my first Al-Anon meeting was November 7th of 1981, and I have not seen it fit to not go to Al-Anon in all those years. I've had a committed meeting that I've attended like a doctor's appointment. I've gone to no less than 3 meetings a week, except in times of physical illness when I couldn't get out of bed and go. I've been there, and those have been very few and far between. The steps, by the way, this has a real-life title now. When Jennifer and I were talking about it, it kind of just morphed into the, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it has a real-life title, which is Practicing the Traditions in All Our Affairs. Okay, now you know. The steps, the 12 steps that we read a minute ago, and we're going to do 12 traditions as opposed to the 9 or so that Chris read. There are a few more, but they're on the back of the page, and, you know, we'll get to them. The 12 steps answered my lifelong questions, the questions I hated to hear, which is, who am I, and who do I want to be? Those were the hardest things I could imagine. I had no idea. I really had no answers for those until I did the steps. They also gave me the basic tools to be who it is I want to be. The most important question that the steps answered for me was a question, it wasn't even on my list until I got to Al-Anon. And that is, what is my relationship with God? For you who are at your first, second, or third meeting, I tend to call my higher power God, You can call God whatever you want to call God, or don't call it at all if you don't want to call it. Perfectly okay with us. Not a requirement. It is, however, a requirement for me at this point in my recovery. And discovering what my relationship is with God has been my spiritual awakening that's promised me in the 12th step. I have found through doing the steps, through having a recovery program, a power greater than myself that can solve my problem, which is basically self-centered fear. For a person who wasn't afraid of anything when I got here. You know, that's the problem with coming to Al-Anon. It takes you a while to be sick, you know. It's hard. It's hard to come and ask for help when there's nothing the matter with you, you know. It's pretty obvious where the problem is. It wouldn't be me. And you stay here long enough, and that's the goodness of God, as far as I'm concerned, is it isn't all revealed at once. You know, it sort of unfolds at your own pace. It just sort of unfolds. More is revealed, and more is revealed only as I can deal with it. Thank heaven. In my case, this power has accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. There's a revolutionary change in my living and my thinking. I bear no resemblance to the woman who walked in here all those years ago. You know, my Al-Anon birthday, it looks a lot like my belly button birthday these days. I can't remember how many years ago. I can just tell you the year it was. I don't know how old I am, but I was born in 1945. Okay. I have a new sense of power and direction. I have found the great reality deep within. My life has been transformed. I had a sponsor for about 15 years in Al-Anon before she passed. And she was the end-all be-all for me. She was just perfect, absolutely perfect for me. And she told a story all the time that I want to share with you. She said when she was fairly new in Al-Anon, she went on a spiritual retreat with her sponsor, and they went to hear some people talk, not necessarily program people, but they went to hear them talk, one of them was a minister. And this minister said he wanted to know how many people in the room were blessed children. And he said, you know that you are a blessed child if when you were growing up you could go to your parents with anything. You could tell them anything. They might get mad, you might get punished, but it would be okay. You knew you were loved no matter what. You knew you were okay no matter what. Very few of us in this program would hold up our hands and say we felt like blessed children. Now, I want you to know that that doesn't have, you know, your parents can't give you the blessing if they don't have it to give. And I think personally I was offered the blessing in a number of ways, but I had a receiver that couldn't receive it. And that I don't place any blame in that deal. That's just the way that was. What happens when you don't get the blessing, the family blessing? And he said that was our birthright, to get the family blessing, to know that you are loved and cared for exactly the way you are. You don't have to do anything or be anything or not do anything or not be anything to be blessed. You go out into the world an emotional cripple, and you go out into the world looking for somebody to give you the blessing. And who do we find? Yes! Him or her. And we're looking for someone to give us the blessing. And what we find is somebody else out there looking for the blessing. We can't give it to them because we ain't got it to give. They can't give it to us because they don't have it to give. And those are dis-easy relationships. What happens is, though, in Al-Anon, is through the course of the fellowship, the literature, the meetings, a day like today, we get the blessing. We get the blessing. It doesn't have to come from your parents or your grandparents or your uncles or your aunts. It can come from this group, and that's where it came from for me. And once you get the blessing, now you can go give it. You know, what I always craved were people who cared for me. That's what I always wanted. It says in the literature that God will create the fellowship I crave, whether it's in my family or my friends or my co-workers. But for him to do that, my real reliance has to be on God. The program promises that when our relationship with God is right, countless great things will come to pass for us and countless others. Yeehaw! That's what I always wanted. I wanted great things to come to pass for me and him. But see, in my diseasiness, I thought I was the source of the great things that were going to come to pass for him. That's great, except that I've discovered that I have the same relationship with God that I have with my dog, which is maybe not so great. I found out in Al-Anon that I only know one way to have relationships because I am the constant in every one of my relationships. I only know how to be one way in relationships. To a large degree, I have the same relationship with my friends that I have with my family, the only difference being my emotional dependency. How I am more emotionally dependent on my husband than I am on the grocer, but basically we have pretty much the same relationship. It's not pretty. I'm not here to tell you it's pretty. This is my experience, strength, and hope. And what we're told in Al-Anon, if you didn't hear it up front, was to take what you like and leave the rest. The Alateens say take what you need and leave the rest. Because if I just took what I liked... before this program, before the 12th step, my relationship with God was that he was out to get me. That the world was out to get me, that life was out to get me, that I wasn't enough and there wasn't enough. There wasn't enough time, there wasn't enough food, there wasn't enough love, there wasn't enough anything. Today my relationship with God is pretty different. It's a pretty loving relationship. I believe today that it is a friendly universe. I often ask for help. I still don't always listen for the answer because I still have a tendency to think I know what it is. But it's a process. We're not looking at event here. We're looking at process. I often say thank you, but I still have a hard time sometimes saying you're welcome and letting that be all I say. The question for me at that place is God through me or am I in charge? Which is one of the reasons I turned to the traditions. The steps taught me to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and those around me. Okay. I'm not perfect yet. And you know, the AA say when they open almost every meeting and read that first part of the fifth chapter, they say, we are not saints. Well, have you noticed every time we close an Al-Anon meeting, we read the closing, we say, we aren't perfect. It's like we have to keep reminding ourselves over and over and over again, okay, I'm not perfect. Oh, that's right. I was pretty sure I was there, you know, but no. And yet, that's one of the things I want to argue with, because I believe we are just about as perfect as we could possibly be today. You know, I couldn't be any more perfect than I am today. This is about as good as it's gotten so far. But I am armed and ready to try, which is what the 12th step says, to try, to practice, 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 practice these principles in all my affairs. Now, how do I do that? By sitting around contemplating my navel, waiting for God to speak to me? Or do I work on my relationships? No. No, the worst thing I've discovered I can do for a relationship is work on it. No. Using this same thought process that got me into the predicament is not going to get me out of the predicament, you know. Thank God for the traditions. Here come the traditions. They're designed to teach me how to have healthy relationships. And I don't know if you noticed this or not, but the steps are written in the past tense. The traditions are written in the present tense. They are the guides for me to go forward in my life, in relationship. The best me participates openly in relationship. I believe that working to be healthy in relationships is a higher goal than individual recovery. This concept of the traditions that I'm going to share with you is my concept, pretty much. It is a work in progress. This is not a be-all, end-all thing. I have a group of sponsees, and every year a number of them elect to do a one-night-a-week study with me at my house. And every year we study something different. It's always spiritual. It's mostly usually conference-approved. Not always. Last year and a couple of years before that, we did the traditions. That's what we did every Wednesday night for a year. And we got pretty tired of talking about them at a group level. What we wanted was how they affected us personally. So after this workshop came sort of into being, I shared what I'm going to share with you with those girls that I did Wednesday night with. And so a lot of this is what we've come up with together. For us, each tradition became a direction, an explanation, and a principle. Tradition one. Now, on your table, handy little handouts, because I am an Al-Anon, darlings. Al-Anon's complete with handouts. There's a little pink sheet, and there's some yellow pages stapled together. There's just one for each table, so you have to learn to share. Part of a relationship is learning to share. For this to work for me personally, I had to kind of rewrite them. But I believe they've been rewritten in the flavor that the original traditions were written. The first tradition is pretty much the same as it's always been. Our common welfare comes first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. The first word in the first tradition is our, just like the first word in the first step is we. I was taught from the get-go that there's no way I can recover alone. The only way I can recover is in relationship with you. And if indeed my life directions are now to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people around me, though I don't see how you can possibly be of service to God without being of service to the people around you. I think they kind of go together. There's Bill's redundancies one more time, but that's okay. Repetition strengthens and confirms. The first step must be for me to participate in relationships with people. Or my other choice is I can isolate and defend. And those are pretty much my choices, which sounds to me like alcoholic death or life on a spiritual basis. Oh, I don't know. Let me think about it. You know, and that's sort of what we do. Let's see, do I want to isolate myself and defend myself, or do I really want to participate in relationships? When you think about it, that's a decision we make on a daily basis in a bunch of different situations. And making the decision to isolate and defend keeps us alone and keeps us sick. And it isn't my recovery or someone else's. What's truly good for me is truly good for everyone else. I don't believe that sacrificing my good is God's plan for my restoration. God doesn't give one person fulfillment and happiness at the expense of another, not the God of my understanding. And vice versa, what's good for everyone else will be good for me, whether I think that way or even feel that way, which is what is the power in group conscience. I'm at best in a relationship when I'm a student, a listener, and a participant, a contributor. Balance is a word that's bandied around a lot in our rooms, and in my area, that's the topic a lot of times. How do you find balance in your life? Yeah, because usually we're looking for it. You know, there's nobody here telling you where it is. We're just looking for it. And by balance, what we mean is non-disturbed. I want to be so nothing bothers me anymore. That's how I want to be. I've discovered that the only way I can't find balance by myself. The only way I can find it is in relationship to you. I need your perspective, your ideas, and even your feelings so that I can find my own. It can be helpful to our common welfare if the people that I'm in relationship are aware of me and my feelings and my opinions, but it's not not always required. I have a fabulous relationship with Harrison Ford that apparently he knows nothing about. And it's lovely. It's a lovely thing. But the issue, one more time, is never how they are in the relationship. It's how I am in the relationship. My part in unity, or the lack thereof, has to do with how I conduct myself in relationship. Now, one of the yellow sheets on your table are a list of questions, and I'm not going to talk about all those questions because we got to move. We got stuff to do today. But I will share the questions, and I'm just going to share my take on a couple of them. But I did that for you, so you don't have to write these down if you don't want to write these down. Am I a loving, integrating, inclusive force in relationships, or am I divisive, quick to criticize, and slow to praise? I tend to be loving and inclusive, and I hope integrating. Sometimes what happens is my degree of inclusivity seems to make somebody else want to exclude themselves because they don't want to be with everybody. They only want to be with some people. I have a couple of sponsorees like that. I don't like her very much. I just want to be by myself. I just want to be with you and you and you and you. That's all I want to be with. And I find myself torn in those situations. But I think one of the ways God speaks to me best is through other people. If I don't let you all in, I'm cutting off part of the message. And I don't believe God has some people that he says, you know what, I don't like her. I just want to be with you and you and you and you and you. I don't think God does that. Am I understanding when others rub me the wrong way or do something that upsets me? Or am I abrasive and rageful? Is it critical that I be right? Oh, my goodness. How my life has been on the line with that one, you know. And you hear in the program sometimes, what I heard early on was, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? And that's often the choice. Today I know that it's, do I want to be right or do I want to be free? I want to be free. One of my life goals is the freedom offered that I pray for in step three. I want that freedom. Do I let people know what I expect of them? Do I know what is expected of me? That's a good one. Do I have tolerance and respect for others? Love and tolerance is our code. And of course, we have to say in Al-Anon, you might not like all of us. Yeah, because the one who wrote that knew how we are, you know. But you will love us. You will love us. I have learned, you know, we are people who would not normally mix. Believe you me. And we don't always mix well as it is. But I'll tell you something. You go to some open AA meetings. You go to some Al-Anon meetings in a different part of town. You go to different parts of the country like I do, like I get to do. And what happens by exposing myself to more and more people, more and more different people, is it's a lot easier to be loving and tolerant than it is when I cut myself off. Do I allow outside interests or pressures to affect the unity of my relationships? All right, tradition two. In my relationships, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience or our mutual decisions. Each of us is a trusted servant. No one governs. Oh, I hate that. I really think occasionally I ought to get to, but no. Now that I'm willing, and willing is always the key to the lock, that's always my part. Now that I'm willing to be in relationships, I have to remember where and what kind of power is in charge. You'd think this was a no-brainer after the steps, but apparently not, because we have a tradition about it, and it's right up front. It's sort of like the we're not perfect thing. And this is about my relationships, not yours and not Harrison's. I don't believe that I'm God's helpless victim in relationships. I don't believe that God puts people in my life and takes them out or makes them or me behave in certain ways or instructs the weather to make me miserable or make me smile. But I do believe that when we reach mutual agreement, it's a God deal, because that's where I put the power. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's where I put my part of the power when we make a decision. One of the little prayers I may say is, God, bless it or block it. It looks like it's going to happen. Bless it or block it. I know that this power is either everything and everywhere, or it's nothing and nowhere. The God of my understanding can't be someplace and not be someplace else. For me, usually God is everything, so I seek and I welcome its manifestation in my relationships and in my decisions. I believe God is the ultimate authority, and with or without my help or yours, he, she, it looks down every day and says it's good. Somehow God takes my biggest mistakes and turns them into miracles. And God can't be on just one side of a decision. So if I've asked for the power here, it's everywhere. And it's back one more time to the idea, if it's good for me, it's good for you. In my relationship with God, I know that God made me to be me. And he trusts me to be me. God is my greatest cheerleader. And I trust God to be God. And in my life, I'm God's greatest cheerleader. God is even my trusted servant, constantly seeing me through the ups and downs of this human experience. But like all my other relationships, it works best if I'm also consciously his servant. You know, that's the word in step 11, that I want to make conscious contact. So much of my life was unconscious. This is about conscious contact. Because God trusts me to be me, he never tells me what to do. If I hear the voice of God, it may be something that says, hey, did you see there's a truck barreling down on you? But it doesn't say, yay, get out of the way. It just says, look around. And that's the kind of trusted servant I want to be in my relationships, offering my perspective, hopefully only when it's requested, but not my rules, which is the way it was before. Do I insist on being the leader, or do I act as if God is in charge, and how does that feel? Well, leadership seems to come naturally to me, and sometimes I look around and they're just little ducklings following me, you know, it seems like. And that's a funny place to be. You know, I found myself after all these years in Al-Anons, if I go to group conscience, sometimes what happens is there'll be some item up for discussion, and about half the heads in the room will go to look at me and see what I think. So my part in this has been to keep my mouth shut in some group conscience meetings and not to have an opinion. I know who's in charge, and I have to act as if I know who's in charge. Is any member of my family or coworker or friend more important than another? Must I have human praise or validation for my actions and ideas? Well, sometimes. Do I do my share in relationships with God, self, and others? And is that only my opinion? Or do the other people feel the same way too? You know, a lot of times I think I'm doing enough. Why don't you get up off your mm-hmm and you do something, you know? I got a few things you could do too. When Dick and I got married, he told me that one of the things that he really had gotten upset about in his other marriage was that he got in a lot of trouble for doing stuff that he didn't know he was supposed to do. I thought, well, I can fix that. I can give him the list, you know. But you know what? That is not my part in relationships. All I'm responsible for is my part. Man, and you know, we stumble into that. That seems to be an ongoing Al-Anon lesson, is what is my part? Where is that? What I want to be careful with is that I am doing all of my part and not some of your part. I want to be sure that I'm doing all of my part and not leaving some things that are mine to do that I don't want to do. I don't want to do the filing, for one thing. Well, it's my part, you know. That's my relationship with the file cabinet. My part is put the stuff in there so I can find it when I need it, instead of saying, well, it's either in this stack or this stack. And a relationship with the filing. Get on with it. How do I feel and react when someone tries to dominate our relationship? Oh, bad. And mad. And I might get into the whole, did you see what she tried to do? You know, it works. The problem with that is a lot of times they don't even know they're trying to dominate. I have given them the power to be in charge. And I have abdicated myself one more time to that deal. It doesn't feel good. And I'll tell you, and I'll probably talk about this more than once today, because it is the cornerstone of my recovery. If I don't honor how I feel, if I don't speak up and say, this is what's going on with me, I've lost another piece of me, or at least have not stood the chance of regaining a piece of me. Not honoring when I feel victimized. Now, that doesn't mean I have to go to the person and say, you know what, I think you're trying to tell me to do something, and I don't want to do it. You know, all the time I hear, I work 5 hours a week at the preschool with the older threes. How can you be an older three? But anyway, with older threes. And the teacher that I aid for is fabulous. She's just wonderful. But one of the things she says to the kids all the time is, I'm sorry, but loud behavior is not okay in here. You know, the truth of the matter is, she's not sorry. She really is not the least bit sorry that loud behavior is not allowed in there, you know. And that's one of those little places where people are feeling, I hear that mostly from people feeling victimized by other people's behavior. Now the other people's behavior is in charge. I'm sorry, but I don't like that. No, I'm not sorry I don't like that. I have to be really careful with those I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry words. Those become self-fulfilling prophecies. I become sorry. I try not to use the sorry word at all, as a matter of fact. If I translate that into I apologize, it has, you know, it has a whole nother deal for me. How does participation is the key to harmony relate to this tradition? And if you wonder where you heard that phrase before, that's one of our service concepts, which you may want to look at. But participation is the key to harmony is just about the only concept that makes sense. I don't mean that. I just have a hard time with them. Sometimes I don't know where they're coming from, but that one I get. And it really works with this tradition. Okay, so tradition three. The only requirement for a relationship is a desire to be in it. Any number, when gathered together for mutual benefit, may call themselves a healthy relationship. When I was fairly new, my sponsor asked me one day, she said, how are you? Sponsors will do that, you know. And I can already tell you that fine isn't the answer. But I was still looking for answers back then, and she said, how are you? And I said, well, under the circumstances, I guess I'm okay. And she said, what are you doing down there? See, I was in relationship with the conditions in my life. And I was pretty much the only one in that relationship. The conditions really weren't in it. You know, it was pretty much just me. And it was a one-down relationship. The conditions were better than me. They were more powerful than me. I was under the conditions. True to form, I had given the power of my life to the conditions, and I was their victim. The same relationship that I had with a lot of people. one more time, it's the same relationship. But I didn't realize I'd made the choice. I didn't know I had a choice. However, the only requirement for a relationship is a desire to be there, and I needed the conditions to be the reason my life sucked and not my self-serving behavior. So I subconsciously chose to be down there. Today I can have an extraordinary, even a healthy relationship with someone, whether that person participates or not. Non-participation in a relationship is sometimes a cannot and sometimes it's a will not. My experience is, for most of the folks in my life, it's a cannot. It's not that they won't participate. They are not able to participate. One of the dearest people in my life that I'm with on a daily basis cannot do an intimate, open, honest relationship. Can't do it. I consider the fact that I'm standing still and loving this one and growing through the experience to be extraordinary. I'm in this deal for you, with you today for our mutual benefit. But just because I'm in this relationship for our mutual benefit doesn't mean that that's the reason you're here. So while it's healthy for me, it may not be healthy for you. And that's your choice. It's fabulous when two or more are gathered together for mutual benefit and develop a healthy relationship. It's a win-win situation, which doesn't, of course, mean that it always feels good. I get how I'm feeling and how I'm doing confused. I think if I don't feel good, it's not going right. How I feel and reality very often have nothing to do with each other. Healthy means growing, which means changing. Changing, which doesn't always sit well with me. But it is fabulous. I'm blessed to participate and watch. I have a good number of sponsorees. I don't know how many, so don't fret yourself because I don't know. There are a lot of people who call me sponsor that I never see or hear from, so what do I know, you know? And there are others that don't call me sponsor who call me all the time, so I don't know. What I do know is that there are a number of them, almost always on a given basis, who have made the decision to be friends with each other and to operate in relationships with each other. They see each other 3, 4, 5 times a week, in meetings and out of meetings, and they've been friends for, some of these people have been friends for 10 years. And in that, what's happened is there's been fighting, disagreement, hurt feelings, anger. And because they are in this deal for each other's mutual benefit, what we've learned is if I can stand still in this relationship and work through the hurts with you, if you'll just stand still and let me work through this with you, we will both grow. I've watched them do that, and it has confirmed and strengthened for me that that's one of the greatest gifts we give each other in program. And it's hard to do, and most of us can't do it. It's hard to stand still. We say that relationship is abusive and I have to walk away. Or that relationship is too hurtful and I can't be in it. I'm not going to be in it. I have had to get somebody else's opinion about whether this is abusive or hurtful. Or if what it is it's just too painful. And, you know, I was telling somebody, I sort of have that kind of relationship with this book, which I'm not going to name on the tape. I'll just let you see it. I sort of have that relationship with that book. It's a lovely, one of the newest Al-Anon pieces. And this is my third time to go through it, except the other two times I've thrown it down in anger and disgust, because it pushed buttons. Got too painful. This is not feeding me. This is taking from me. I don't want to read this every morning. And finally it occurred to me, what a fabulous relationship I have with this book. This book has come along with some, I got buttons. It's not about the book. It's about my buttons one more time. And the book is pointing out the buttons. Now, do I want to, you know, kind of sand down some of those buttons? That's what the silly book is trying to do. This time, I'm farther through it than I have been before. It's only the end of February, but... Okay. Do I judge others' intentions or sincerity? Why, yes, I do. I'll say to myself, he didn't mean that. You know what? Not up to me to decide whether he meant it or not. One of the gifts I got early on was my sponsor said, turn off the sound and look at the picture. Turn off what you're hearing and watch what you're seeing, because what you're seeing is the truth. What you're hearing is just background noise. When I watched what people did as opposed to what people said, I had a much better idea about whether their intentions were sincere or not. Do I focus on giving love and support in my relationships, sharing only my experience, strength, and hope? Or do I give suggestions? I'm not answering that one. Am I committed to or do I encourage others' spiritual and professional freedom as well as individual growth? Or do I feel threatened by their success? Do I listen when others share their opinions and feelings without making it about me or trying to change them or fix them? You know, if you ask my dog whether he needed fixing when we took him to the vet, he would have said, I am not broken. And most people that I try to fix are not broken. I just want them to look the way I want them to look. They're not broken. They don't need fixing. God, that's hard. Do I share my opinions and feelings without making it about them and expecting them to fix me? I work on that one, and I'll talk about it again. For me, it's a process of reporting. I report my feelings. I report. When I was early in Al-Anon, I was told that I needed to report to the alcoholic his behavior the night before, occasionally, not always. Very tempting, but only when something, you know, like physical abuse had happened in a blackout the night before. I needed to report it to him the next day. And what I discovered in that process was I had to report the behavior and leave the room because I wanted to add my opinion and I wanted to add my suggestions and my directions. But that's what this is about. I can report. Do I have a desire to be in my current relationships? Or are there some of them where I feel like a victim? I have to be with this person, or I can't be with this person because blah, blah, blah. Am I working on being healthy in my relationships, and how does that look? How important is honesty and trust to a healthy relationship? That's the end of me for this session. Here's what I want to have happen. We changed the times because I want, this is a workshop, which means I expect you to do some work. This is not me up here lecturing you all day long, although I could if you really needed me to. But I don't think you need me to. And because you're all at tables, this is so perfect. The whole thing is that if you're not at a table, find yourself a table and pull your chair up. Are there any more empty seats that these people can come to, or can they just pull up to your table? Just, you can pull up. Find yourself a table. And I hope you chose your seatmates well, because these are your seatmates for the rest of the day. This is your group. We're going to do four sessions, and this one is going to go until 10. Look, this goes 10:20 technically, and then the break is from 10:20 to, is that right? 10:20 to 10:40. You know what? My next thing, I'm going to start again at 10:30. I'm going to try to get back on schedule if I can. So you've got 20 minutes to do this. What I want you to do is right now, I want there to be four volunteers, someone to chair this meeting and then someone to chair each of the little group meetings you're going to have for the rest of the day. Get your four volunteers right now. They're committed to come back. See, I like that. Four volunteers. What I want you to do If you will listen, we can get, you'll have more time. The chair is to be your voice, not your group conscience, your voice. And the chairs for each session will keep track of what you come up with as the principles or the ahas or the questions or additional questions or whatever that you have found out about the traditions we just talked about. And then at the end of the day, one of your chair people is going to report back to all the groups about what you came up with, and let's see what new things you all have come up with. I believe strongly in the power of group conscience, and that's what we're doing, is the power of group conscience. So, have at it. You've got 25 minutes, and you can do a break in there whenever you want to. Most everybody's in a seat, which is close enough for me. I was watching you when I wasn't out watching the ocean. I was watching you, and you're in the spirit of it, which makes me very happy. You go, you rock. All right. We are now at tradition four, or I am. Some of you didn't get past tradition one at your table, but we're at tradition four. No, there are no rules. No rules. This one thought they had to get past them. I don't know why. No. Tradition four says, I should be autonomous in relationships, except in matters affecting other relationship partners, the relationship, or society as a whole, which would be a pretty big thing if I could affect society as a whole, but I'd like to think I could. Which basically means I can do whatever I want to, free will, until it affects someone else. And it's not unless, it's until. It's like the 10th step, you know, it says when we were wrong. It doesn't say if by chance we might ever happen to be wrong again. You know, it says like expect it, it's going to happen. And the fact is that what I do is going to affect other people. It's just the way of the world. If I'm actually participating in relationships, that's what's going to happen. And when it affects someone else, or when it might, I have to remember that I don't live in a cave. There are others on this planet. No man is an island. And oh, yes, I'm in these relationship thingies on purpose. By choice. Most importantly, I have to remain me no matter who or what I relate with. A great tool I got early on was take everybody else out of the picture. Now what do you want to do? My sponsor would say, what do you want to do? And I'd go, oh, I don't know. And she'd say, yes, you do know. The problem is you got too many people in the picture. Take everybody out of the picture. Now, what do you want to do? If it didn't affect somebody else, or if you didn't think, which is the problem, if you didn't think it was going to affect somebody else, what would you do? It doesn't mean that I have to do that thing, but it is critical that I know what that thing is. It is critical that I know how I feel. I may choose to not do that thing, but then it's a choice. And I'm not a victim. It's a choice. The fact of the matter is it's my own recognition that my soul is seeking, not yours. And those are the moments when I can give it that recognition. Then, if I decide not to do it, whatever it is, it's my decision and not a sacrifice. When I start feeling like I've sacrificed something, it's usually one of those times when I didn't speak up or I don't know how it was I really felt. Thank goodness that I no longer believe sacrifice is a blessed sacrament. I used to think that if I heard enough and gave enough and did enough for you, then somehow it would all work out for me. I don't know, you know. I thought you would do back for me. I heard a guy on the airplane yesterday. He had put his suitcases like three rows back of where he was sitting. Not a good idea, but he'd done that. And somebody had to, over our heads, they were handing these suitcases up to the front. And he said to his wife, see, I helped a lady yesterday, and see, they're helping me today. I thought that's the way it was always going to be, you know. if I did enough for you. And he remembers helping that lady. He apparently made a note of that, you know, in his little book. Here's a day I helped a lady. Well, God love him, and, you know, I'm not complaining. Thank goodness he did. I might have been the lady he helped. I usually, you know, I take my suitcases on the plane, and then I stand there and look helpless. So that somebody, or sometimes I actually will speak up and say, oh, would you like to lift this up or have me drop it on your head? Those would be your choices. You think I'm kidding. I really do say that. Because it really is an option, you know. I believe that I'm an instrument in the orchestra of life. Some days I'm the lively percussion, other days a mellow cello. And there's always whiny violin. But I don't think God just uses me. I don't think I'm just a channel. It was my own personal belief. God creates his music through me and with me. If I'm not autonomous, if I'm not Ellen, God can't use me. God can't do what God wants to do. God can't do the miracles that are here to be done if I'm not me. That's my responsibility. I have to be autonomous. I have to be me. And I have to remind myself that. You know, I wish I could tell you that I just had to go home and look back in my old pages to find out where it said, take everybody else out of the picture, now what do you want to be? No. I do it on a daily basis. And it's almost always when I say, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. I'll probably talk about it. No, I probably won't. But I might. You don't ever know. I don't ever know. Hell, how would you know if I don't know? Anyway. I try to keep my conversations to myself. It doesn't always work. One of the things I find, Al-Anons are just, I don't like to say this in a mixed crowd, you know what I mean? But we are just the funniest things to watch sometimes. Sometimes we make me really frustrated, because if you want to watch something frustrating, there's two things you can do. Watch a bunch of Al-Anons decide where to go for lunch. Oh, I don't know. Where do you want to go? I'm not really hungry for anything in particular. Where do you want to go? And, you know, and somebody will say, well, how about Mexican food? You want to go for Mexican? No, that's not really That's not good. You know, and we do the same thing at group conscience meeting when we sit there and don't speak up, when we don't sit there, when we don't do what's our part to do, and our part is to be autonomous and to be faithful to ourselves. Questions at 4. Can I be truly autonomous without knowing who I am? I don't believe I can. I don't believe I can. My Al-Anon diseasiness is when the lines between me and you are erased. And I don't know where you start and I stop. I am not autonomous in those times. I believe that one of my greatest gifts is the ability to know how you feel. And I do. I mean, I really, really do. And when you love somebody, if you're anything like me, especially if it's an alcoholic, you know how they feel. But it's not limited. We can do it with everybody, you know. It isn't empathy that we felt that way one time and now we feel our old feelings, you know. And it's not sympathy that we see they're hurting. We actually feel what they're feeling. We can reduce other people's responsibility for their feelings by feeling them ourselves. That's what we do. That's our enabling behavior, emotional enabling behavior. It's what I do. My sponsor told me one time there are only so many bad feelings in each situation. Those are hers. Don't take them. Let her have them. You're not doing her a favor. Intimate relationships are relationships where people come together as one and share. And then they go back to being two wholes. And they mean wholes, not holes that suck up everything that come around them, you know. These are real whole human beings. I tended to be in relationships that were like this. And when one of us moved, the other one went, pfft, because we were codependent. Oh, let me tell you. When I was new in Al-Anon in the early 80s, treatment centers were coming into their own. And if you wanted to watch the eyebrows go up in an Al-Anon meeting, you could throw around some of the treatment center words. If you said codependent, there was an audible intake of breath at the table. People went, oh! Or if you said, I have issues. Or if you said, I have fear of abandonment. You know, but it's like everything else we've sort of adopted. You know, we've taken what works for us and blown off the rest because it doesn't work for us anymore. It just blew itself away. Can I be autonomous in my relationship with my higher power? I'm going to leave that one to you. Do I think about how my decisions will affect others? If so, do I communicate with them and come to agreement? How many times do you have one of those conversations in your head where you're pretty sure you told him? You're pretty sure you asked that question. And the other person goes, what? But we do that. We have the ability to hold those conversations in our head and there's no one else present. This one is the one to remind me that it has to come out of my mouth, that they really can't read my mind and I can't read theirs either. To what lengths am I willing to go to protect the integrity of my relationships? This one sort of bleeds into some other traditions. How do I deal with others' anger about something I've done in my autonomy? Ooh, we could talk about that one all day. How does this freedom preserve unity in my relationships? There's a difference between unity and dependency. What we're looking for here is unity. And if everybody is not free to be autonomous in this relationship, we can't be unified. We can't have unity. We're dependent otherwise. Do I allow others to live by their own standards, unfettered? That's one of my sponsee's words, unfettered. I love it, though. By my judgment or attempts to control. It is so hard, man, and you know, especially when it's somebody you live with or raised, you know, and they are doing something you know is wrong. It really gets hard to let them live unfettered by my judgment. It's even hard, but the pain is more in my head than it is anyplace else these days most of the time because I attach myself to their behavior when I'm in there judging it. And you know, I want to talk about the difference between judgment and discernment. Discernment is a good tool to have. Discernment lets you gauge how fast the truck coming at you is coming so you can get out of the way. When I judge, it's sort of a catch-all word because I don't just judge you. I judge you, I sentence you, and I execute you. I do all of those things when I say I judge you. Spiritual discernment, my sponsor always put that up as a big thing that I don't even know that I can spell it yet, but that spiritual discernment was what we were looking for as opposed to judgment. She said. Tradition 5. Since my purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and thus to those around me, my relationships have but one primary purpose, to serve as an expression of that service. This is another apparent no-brainer. Whatever my purpose is ought to be why I do stuff. But I forget about God, and I get scared. And people in fear are very self-centered. And I think you're supposed to make me feel better about me. Get me a good deal on a car, be my sponsor, stay with me forever. Those things can happen, I understand, in healthy relationships. But rarely do they work when my motive is not in agreement with my primary purpose. I can only make decisions from one of two places, from fear or from love. I either make decisions to separate myself and protect myself, or I make decisions because I trust God to be God, and I believe in the power of love. Those are the two places I can come from. If I make the decisions out of fear, they become reactionships and not relationships. And I had a lot of reactionships before I got here. Separation and divorce is the rule in alcoholic homes. It is the rule for us living in the active disease, whether there's drinking or using or not. And I believe that I have the disease of alcoholism. I have that same kind of thinking. I have that same impulsive behavior. My addiction is to him or to her or to whatever it is I think I got to have right this second, but mostly it was him. Mostly it was him. I had a physical reaction to him, a reaction that I've heard alcoholics describe when they describe drinking. When he would come home or say the right thing or do the right thing, which was rare, I remember those occasions, but when it happened, I would feel this inside. I still have the disease of alcoholism. You've heard that. It's not a wasm, it's an ism. I still have it. I still consider myself living in the active disease, but I'm in recovery from my active disease. Alcoholism is a deadly disease, and it kills not only relationships, but it kills the people in the relationships. And we mourn those deaths, often for years and years and years. However, harking back to the God of my understanding who looks down every day and says, "It is good," then I believe this is the way things are designed to be. I saw a statistic one time that said that 97% of all families were dysfunctional. Well, you got a couple of things going there. Who are those 3%? And who took the poll? You know, I'd like to know. They didn't ask me, and I can tell them about at least three families in my very own life. But it occurred to me that maybe God doesn't have things 97% of the way he doesn't want them. Maybe this is the way families are supposed to be. I don't know. One of my biggest tools is I don't know. I believe that every relationship, like every human, every book, every day, is designed to have a beginning and a middle and an end. It used to be that the end came when the relationship, whether it was with a pencil or with a person, no longer met my needs or my expectations. Sometimes I trash can them, and sometimes they dump me. I can set it up to make them dump me, if that's what I think needs to happen. And I don't have to plan it. I can just do it. I'm so talented. Today, I don't have to walk away from relationships. And I don't send very many people screaming into the night anymore about my behavior. God really is in charge. If I'm here on this planet in this relationship, then it must still be serving a purpose. And I must still be able to be of service here. I had a job that I loved dearly. And then came the time I didn't love it so dearly anymore because they didn't do it right anymore. The old people left and new people came in and they didn't do it right. Ugh, it was so hard. And I would have to go to work. My sponsor would say, "Do you want to be in that job today?" And I'd have to make the decision to be in that job today. Until I got to the place where I said, "You know what, God, if this is not where you want me, if this is not the place where I can be of service, I'm ready to move." And I really don't know whether God just moves you then or not, but I believe the opportunities to move or stay become more apparent when I'm willing. Whether it's in a job or a marriage or a book, like this one over here. Okay, it's just like when people come to Al-Anon for the wrong reason, you know what I mean, the wrong reasons, used to worry me a lot. They don't have an alcoholic. Their kid's a user. What are they doing here? You know, used to worry me a lot because I thought, and we're having this issue today in Al-Anon. because we've got double winners who don't know how to do Al-Anon. They're doing a very watered-down version of AA in Al-Anon is what they're doing. They don't know any better because we haven't told them. But I used to, and it's still the feeling that they're going to come in and ruin it. They are going to ruin this. You know what? If I keep it Al-Anon, which is my job, it is my job. It's the chairman of the meeting's first responsibility to take care of stuff that happens in the meeting. If the chairman can't or won't, everyone in the room is a trusted servant. Everyone in the room has a responsibility to speak up. And my responsibility, I would like to tell you, is to Al-Anon, but it's really to me. I can't be responsible to Al-Anon. I have to be responsible to me. That's where it's got to start. I used to think they were going to ruin it, but it took what it, you know, but those people who came in and they said, well, I'm here because my counselor sent me. I don't know why I'm here, you know. I'd think, ugh. But what I've discovered is if it isn't right for them, they leave. The trick is I have to keep it Al-Anon for them to figure out whether it feeds them spiritually or not. I've been in meeting with, one of my greatest teachers was a guy early on who came to Al-Anon meetings because he was taking a drunk to a meeting next door and he just needed to kill an hour, you know, while he was waiting for the drunk. And our room was close and the chairs were comfortable and it was filled with women and he was a guy, so it looked like a good, you know, what's not to like in there? And we loved him, which is number one, the kiss of death. You know, we loved him. From the get-go, that's a sign. If we love you, it's a sign. He'd been in there 6 months before one day in a meeting, his eyes got really big and he went, oh my God. He was an Austrian man and he said, I just had a flashback. I just saw the empty bottles in my house when I was growing up. He had blocked it all out. He had no idea there was any act of alcoholism in his life. He had no idea. He didn't come to Al-Anon trying to get any help, but the fact is it fed him and he fed us, and it was exactly where he needed to be. The same is true with relationships. If these relationships don't fit my primary purpose, they will end. As stuff unfolds, as more is revealed, the relationships will end. I don't have to pick and choose relationships. You know, it's like I used to try to decide what I'd get invited to go speak someplace, and I'd get invited some, you know, and then a couple of weeks later, somebody would call and ask me to go on the same weekend to do something else, and I'd think, oh my God, which one do I pick? How do I pick this? And my sponsor said, you do the first one. That's what you do. Well, then came the time I'm taking care of my, for the last 6.5 years, I've taken care of my 4 youngest grandchildren. There was only one when I started, and then there's 4. And, I made an agreement with my children because when I travel, that means that on that Friday, someone has to take off work in those two families to watch the kids. So I made an agreement with them that I would only go one weekend a month. Well, I have a, you know, somebody calls and asks me to come talk, and they want me to come talk in one of them rectangle states in the middle, you know, in the middle of winter. And then I get a call, you know, wanting me to come to Palm Springs or something, you know, on the same weekend. I go, wow, how do you pick? And my sponsor says, God already picked. It's already picked. You go the first time. And, you know, I have to remember that. I don't have to pick through these things. The picking's already done. The picking will happen. I don't, you know what, the other thing we say to each other in every meeting, trying to force solutions, is how we make ourselves crazy. Right. I forgot that. Okay. Sometimes I've told God in a meeting, please, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, don't let that moron that's sharing right now ask me to be their sponsor. And you know what happens, you know. Because I believe God answers my highest prayer. And my highest prayer is to be of service. And that's the prayer that gets answered. I'm going to tell you a very powerful prayer I said a number of years ago, and I'm warning you up front that it's powerful. Don't do it if you're not ready for the consequences. God, don't put anybody in my life until you can be first and I can be me. And if you say that, I'm going to tell you the first thing that happens. People fall out of your life. And they tend to be the people that you had between you and God. God, don't put anybody in my life until you can be first and I can be me. But I don't want to be in relationships unless God can be first and I can be me. Is this indeed the purpose of my relationships? Do I ever resort to emotional blackmail? Do I ever start sentences with, if you loved me, you would? Or, if you really wanted to be my friend, you would? Or, I would never treat my friend like blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, baby. It's emotional blackmail. And I can do it to them whether they're in the room or not. They don't have to be there for me to say that. I can't tell you the conversations I've had with people who said, well, I can't believe they treated me like that. I would never treat anybody like that. You know, here's the thing. Are you of maximum service? Or are you here for people to mind you? I have done the if you loved me. I haven't done that in a long, long time. I have learned that if you want a friend, you have to be a friend. And you may get the person you want to be a friend with. You may not. Might be another friend you get. Might be the moron who comes up and asks you to be their sponsor. But the trick, one more time, is I have to be who I want to be in the relationship. I have to be me in this relationship. Could I go a whole week without explaining or complaining? If you can, I want you to email me. I want to know about that. I think we will dedicate a wing in our new Al-Anon building to you. Do I go within for my source of strength to transcend my seeming difficulties? Do I really understand that my troubles are of my own making? Or do I explain, shut down, or get angry? I'll leave you that. Do I depend on my relationship partners or my own language, looks, race, education, age, appearance, job, etc. for my self-esteem? You're right. Can I practice God's love when I can't feel it for myself? Yes, I believe I can. I believe I can. Thank God that I don't have to feel right to act right. Thank God that this is about acting my way into feeling differently. You know, the first thing that changes in this program, the first thing the program does is change my behavior. I often say if Al-Anon has done nothing else, it trained my feet. My feet know where to go, and they will go when I don't want to. They'll go. The next thing that happens is my thinking changes. Slowly, 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 but my thinking changes. The absolute last thing that happens is my feelings change. And waiting until it feels right to do it will keep me trapped in the old behavior. So yes, I believe I can do God's love when I don't feel it. And I'll tell you something else. A lot of times I can't feel it until I do it. I have these people in my life, these darling single women that I sponsor who say, I just want somebody to love me. And we talk about it, and we talk about it, and we talk about it. And I say, why don't you go to the animal shelter and volunteer? You love animals. Go do that. Why don't you go? You're so good with older people. Why don't you go to a retirement home and volunteer your time? And what happens is they start to you can't feel loved until you love. It doesn't go the other way around. The way you feel loved is to love yourself. And love is a verb, it's not a noun. Same way I believe God's a verb, not a noun. It's an action. I would like to, you know, there are a lot of times I say my prayers. I was telling you about it early on. I say my prayers and then I don't listen for the answer because I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is. Or I go about my business and expect God to go about my business too, you know. But sometimes you have to do God. I have to do God. I have to do what it is I believe I want God to give me. I got to do it. Do I allow others' needs, you notice the quotes, needs, to come before my spiritual growth? Not anymore. Can I see others through God's eyes or hear them through God's ears? Do you know what? My sponsor taught me that prayer when I doing a fifth step. So, oh my God, we got to get going here. Never mind.